Practice makes perfect. Learn Minecraft. Today, I'm talking to Jessie Lane, a globally celebrated artist known for creating some of the most hyper-realistic portraits in the world, using nothing but patience, precision, and coloured pencils. So in this episode, Jessie breaks down the exact process that he uses, the mindset behind it, and how he turned a slow and often underestimated medium into a full-time art career. So if you've ever felt the pressure to work faster, or post more, or chase trends, Jessie's story is the reminder you need that mastery comes from slowing down and going deeper and making something that truly moves people. So, let's get into it. Hi Jessie, how are you doing?
Hey Sam, I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. So you work in colour pencil, which is well known to be quite a slow medium. How do you find that's taught you in terms of being an artist?
It is a very slow medium. I try not to focus on that too much. I think everyone thinks, oh, whatever art I do, even if it only takes me a couple hours, like this is so slow. Like everyone calls their stuff slow. So I try to keep it in perspective a little bit and just be like, this is the process, but it does feel slow at the same time. Absolutely. And one thing I think that kind of helps me with that is just getting some space at times. Like some days I feel like I'm moving quicker than others. And then sometimes I think I'm just too immersed in it and I've kind of lost sight of the big picture in a way. And I kind of have to put it aside and work on something else, or maybe even go do something else that's not art altogether, can be very helpful. But it's a great medium. I really love it. I love the precision of it, its ability to layer, and it kind of catches people off guard too. It's something that, you know, you wouldn't think of as being fine art necessarily, at least when you first, you know, become aware of colored pencils as a kid, and yet it can become fine art. So I love all that about colored pencil. Yeah,
that's incredible. Me too. I love all of that as well. So do you really enjoy the slowness of it, or do you feel like it sort of needs to be slow to get those incredible results that you're trying to achieve?
I think it needs to be slow to a point. You know, there is layering with it, where if you want it within realism, you know, you can do all sorts of different things. But if you're going for like a photorealistic kind of style, I think it is going to take layers. It's going to take, you know, colors overlapping each other and not just being like, here's color A, here's color B next to it, and having this very kind of blocky, cartoony look. And that does take time. It takes time, and you have to kind of feel out how much of each layer to put down, right? Because you don't want them all to pronounce themselves the same way. The value layers are especially important. But I do like the slowness of it at times. But then when I've had times too where it's like I've been drawing a water drop just over and over all day, every day for 4 weeks straight, and I am ready to move on. And, you know, at those times, it's like it is too much. But at the same time, it can be nice to kind of have a little bit of a routine where it's like, okay, today I'm just coloring this and tomorrow I'm coloring this. And that's very predictable and it's comforting in a way. So it's nice at times, and then at other times it's not so nice.
Yeah, definitely. I could see how that would take its toll if you're drawing the same drop for 4 weeks.
Absolutely.
So can you take me through your layering process then? Like, how do you sort of do it from start to finish? What is your decision making?
Yeah, that's a great question. In the beginning, for me, it was all very intuitive and just like, what do I think I need to do? And that was kind of before I'd really clarified it, what my process is, and started teaching. And what I found is I do about, if you were to like take a section of one of my drawings and you were to look at the ingredients of it, which is kind of a weird thing to think about, 2/3 of my layering would be just values. Okay. The next like 25 to 30% would be like a color that's kind of tinting over everything. And then that final 10%, that is where the detail happens. That's where the colors go all over the place. And it has that really intricate feel. And I've learned to kind of keep things, you know, really focusing on the values and overall void of detail until the very end. And then putting those details on the end rather than trying to start with value, color, and details all at the same time and bring them up together. That's much more confusing and kind of less cohesive in a way. So that's really helped me to actually improve my speed, is just getting awareness of that.
Oh, that sounds really cool. So is that sort of how you stop it going muddy then, by having those, that separation of like values and then detail later?
Yes. Also, one thing I do is I try to balance colors a lot of times. So I do a lot of skin tone, which I would say all skin tones are kind of like some variation of brown, maybe lighter, maybe darker, but all brown. And brown is made up of any two sets of complementary colors, right? So there's yellow and purple, there's green and red or pink, you could even say, being a lighter red, and then there's orange and blue. And what I can do is I can actually take the brown and say, you know, I'm going to use so much brown, but then I'm also going to kind of pull the brown apart into sets of complementary colors, to where I'm kind of making the brown out of these different, more colorful ingredients, but they're balanced. And I think that kind of helps the work to have more color to it when you look at it up close, and without letting anything kind of tip the balance too far in one direction. Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. Thank you. So do you remember like the first time that you loved how focused this medium made you? Like, what drawing were you doing, or what were you doing at the time?
I think when I really got hooked on colored pencil, like I'd already been using it for a few years, but when it really was like hooking me was kind of with the hope of doing photorealism. It was my senior year of high school, and there was the classmate who I thought was the best in that class, and she did a piece that was burnished, so all the white specks were filled in, which really gave it this like dramatic wall power and punch to it. And it was also like pretty photorealistic too at the same time. And that to me was when I first saw it like transcend scribbles of color, and kind of having this faded look to like, this is rich, just as rich as a painting. And it's just as realistic as a photograph. And it's like, this is no longer just colored pencil being colored pencil. This is colored pencil being something else. And so when I went off to college, that was like my big focus of what I was kind of reaching for in my work, is how to really do this with colored pencil. And then, you know, getting out of it and starting out with my career as well, it's been like me wanting to explore that ability. But that was, I would say, the first time for me. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. So, you know, you've got this incredibly detailed style. Did that just come naturally, or is that something that you've been trying to create in your artwork?
I think it's, you know, I started out drawing anime, actually. So very simple, the opposite of very, very detailed. And that was what interested me at the time. But I would say I kind of had this confusion of photorealism and being very, very detailed as the same thing. And so as I wanted to be more photorealistic, it's kind of like trying to show off in a way. And I'm thinking, okay, if I have more detail, or if I'm finding the detail, that makes it more photorealistic. And there's a time for detail and there's a time to avoid it too, is what I've learned. But I was really interested in it. Like the first time I felt like I really nailed someone's hair with like long flowing hair, like that was very satisfying in a way. Or when I did like the texture on like a jacket and drew the denim texture, that was really satisfying. So it was kind of like, ooh, I'm like kind of creeping in the photorealism here, which was a lot of fun in the beginning because I wasn't really sure if I could do it. But I would say it's something I've reached for. And then I've also had to learn how to push away from that in a way, meaning I think if everything is too detailed, then everything jumps out and you want parts with a lot of detail and then parts that are less attention demanding in a way to make that detail feel special or pop. And I've had to learn to find that balance because I want to be like, more is more in a way.
Right, so you're choosing where to focus the detail then in your drawings to get that, the eye looking at that specific area.
Yes, and black backgrounds, I feel like that's a big helper for me because it's so opposite of, you know, all that detail and kind of overly defining things in a way. It's the complete opposite. So I feel like it helps me to get away with having so much detail at times.
So do you have a different mindset when it comes to drawing details compared to wider or smoother areas like your shadows and your backgrounds?
Absolutely. Everything starts out fairly simple and then I add the detail in. So when I do the simpler areas, I try to kind of leave them more simple and soft. And some I really have to kind of watch myself and make sure I don't put detail in. It can have like a variation to it, like a suggestion of a texture maybe, or like some splotches of color, but maybe not quite so tiny. But, you know, I try to kind of do a little bit of a softer version of the detail areas, I guess, where there's still like splotches of color and the color is fluctuating a little bit, or maybe there's a suggestion of texture. And then some areas are even more simple than that. And it's kind of just the shape of brown almost in some areas for like a skin tone, for example. But I try to like bridge to the detail, if that makes sense, with like a softer version of the detail. And that helps it to kind of all tie together in a way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool. Now, just wondering as well what you said about your big black backgrounds. Like, how do you stop the black looking flat if you just use a black color pencil?
It's a pretty dark black. You know, I've heard mm-hmm. like mix in the red or like mix red and blue back and forth, and I've tried it. With colored pencil, the black is like so much darker than anything else, and so it has like a real punch to it, and it doesn't come off being very gray at all. But one thing I do is like when you color, there's the white specks of the paper if you're on white paper showing through. And I'm really particular about like make sure I color in like every single one. That goes a long way, is not leaving like any white specks behind whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives it like a very clean, dark look in the end.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool. Yeah, I like to also do that as well. Make sure there's no paper left. Yeah. So when you're working on these tiny details, then like, how do you stay focused, especially for long periods of time?
Yeah, it can be kind of challenging at times. I think there's kind of maybe two types of motivation for me in a way. There's like the joy of doing something and the art itself. And that's fun at times, especially like at first, but then that wears off. So then what do you, and I try to think about like, oh, this is going to be for like a show, or like I want to hang this in this spot in my house. But it's like, I try to motivate myself with something external when it just starts to feel like work, but I'm doing it anyway. And that can help me too, to get through to like the next part where I move on to like a new area and it's just like kind of fun again.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometimes too, like if neither of those work, I'll just like work on something else. Sometimes watching like TV while I work can help too, to kind of distract. But if it's like really detailed stuff, then I kind of have to stay focused on it. So that doesn't always work, but, yeah, it's just, I try to mix it up a little bit, or maybe play some different music or think different thoughts at least. Just kind of keep my mind stimulated so it's not so repetitive, you know, just to take my mind off the repetition.
Yeah, definitely. It can get a bit tedious sometimes, can't it, if you're working on the same area for a long time?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about your studio now, which is just the most incredible studio I've ever seen for a color pencil artist. How did you come up with the design and how has it sort of like changed over time?
Yeah, you know, it started out as a desk in the corner of a room. And for a long time, I worked at a desk and I mean, like, the first thing I did for my studio one day was, like, the colored pencil sharpener, like, it just sits on your desk, right? And I, like, took a flat piece of wood, and I, like, traced the shape of the sharpener, and then I cut it out with a saw, and I, like, stuck it in there so it would quit wiggling around on my desk when I sharpened the pencil. And I was like, oh, I could, like, build things for my studio. So, you know, I made like 200 drawers to store all of my different Prismacolors. And that was like the first big, big thing I did. But, you know, I built like all this stuff for a desk. And then as soon as I did that, I was like, you know, I think I want to work at an easel. And so it's like, I still have the desk, but it's like, I don't use the kind of dream desk that I dreamed up for so long in a way. And now I'm working on an easel. But, you know, I went on. I kept building things, and like, I built these like grid systems behind me here to hold my different colored pencils. And so I've got like Prismacolor in one, Holbein in one, different Derwents in one, Polychroma. So it's like separated by brand. And then I have one for like common skin tone colors too, or like super dark darks, but they're all portable. Like I could lift each one out and bring it elsewhere, and then I have others actually in a separate room that I bring in sometimes and set in, which it, to me is like really cool because I mix so many different pencils together when I work, and there are times I want a certain brand and then times I don't, but it's kind of been like I keep looking at it like, what could I like build, and I've just been under the assumption like the perfect, or not even perfect, but like a real serious colored pencil studio, like it doesn't exist yet because it's such a new medium. Like I just kind of look at it that way. Like a painter's studio, I think there's so many painters out there and they invent things too, but it's like that's been done before, but like this is new. So like just being aware that there's possibilities out there, and I kind of try to make stuff for it, I guess, which is a lot of fun. My dad taught me a lot of woodworking, and it's cool to kind of like cross the skills together in a way. And by no means am I like an awesome, awesome woodworker, but it's really cool to like pair with colored pencil. And it's kind of like unique stuff. I'm like, I don't even know what I'm making, but it's fun. But basically I didn't like plan it out. It just kind of like came over time, and I built like one thing a year for over the course of like 10 years. And then, you know, it's kind of just where I am today.
That's so incredible. Like you say, you're not good. You're not an amazing woodworker, but looking at that thing that you've made is just so amazing. How long did that take you to make?
About 2 months. Yeah, this one was 2 months over here. And then there's one behind me right here. This one took me 1 month, and I built this the year before. And I liked it so much. It's kind of like a single standalone version. And then that's like a much bigger one. So that was kind of like my practice run at it, I guess, in a way. Yeah, I've been like take a month or two off of art just to woodwork many times. Yeah.
No, that's so amazing. You should like have your own other side business of just making studio furniture. That would be really cool.
I thought about it, honestly, about like, could I get like a laser cutter and like get it to cut out the wood and, you know, make it this assemblable thing. And it's kind of like in the back of my mind, like maybe what if, I'm like, I don't know if I want to run that whole business either. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it's less fun when you're doing it for other people, and it's more fun if you're just making it for yourself in your studio.
Yeah, I got to see the finished thing with this.
No, mm-hmm. Oh, it's very cool. I love it. It's incredibly inspiring as well. So do you have any like studio habits or routines that help you stay focused and I guess calm and creative as well? Because it's quite a beautiful space you've made.
Thank you. Yeah. I think what helps me is just like being aware of like kind of my own self and my own personality even. Like I know I work better in the morning than like the middle of the day or in the evening, where my wife is kind of the opposite and she works best like right before bed and not so much in the morning. So like just being aware of that, I try to like prioritize my schedule. So like if I can't do art as much, like at least try to get the morning in there. So that really helps.
And yeah, I think like getting out at times too, like I know this space, like it's really colorful and it's like to me, if I saw this 10 years ago, I'd be like, I would never get bored drawing in there. But like the thing is, it does get old and it's like it becomes familiar to where you're kind of numb to it. And I kind of have to remind myself at times, like, I built this incredible place. Like, this is so cool. But yeah, it's like I do kind of have to fight that and like walk, just like go on a walk sometimes or like working out in the middle of the day. That's always really good. Or just like getting around people and, you know, spending time with my wife or just going out with a friend can be good too. So, it's a balance because too much time in the studio, I think, can be kind of like detrimental in a way.
Do you ever find that you get to the point where you feel like you've definitely been drawing too long because it's just not going right anymore?
Yeah, I really gotta force myself because I never want to like let go and just like go out and do something else. But whenever I do, it always like I make up for all the time I lost because usually I'm working very slow and very unclear.
Yeah, definitely. No, I get exactly what you mean. So, what's your favorite pencils and paper that you like to use then? Like, do you have a specifically a favorite brand or like a few pencils that you always use?
Yeah, I would say for paper, that's a very easy question for me. It's Strathmore Bristol Vellum 400 four ply. It's a white paper. And I'm very familiar with it. It has a decent amount of tooth, but not so much tooth that it's like super bumpy. So I like that one a lot. Now for pencils, and I haven't tried that many papers either. I'm just familiar with the one. For pencils, I think it's very important to realize different pencils do different things, and paper too, actually. But you know, pencils really do different things. Softer pencils, I think, blend better with each other. They're more easy to layer and get that smooth transition versus like a harder leaded pencil is very good for detail. So it's not that there's a best pencil, but different tools do different things. I like Holbein a lot. I like Prismacolor a lot too. But like the ones I use are like Holbein, Prismacolor, Derwent Lightfast, Luminance, and Polychromos. Those are probably like the biggest ones I use. And it kind of depends on what I'm working on, what area.
No, very interesting. How do you find the Holbein then? Because I think those are the ones that I actually haven't tried to use yet, but I use all of those others that you just mentioned.
They behave a lot like a Prismacolor. They're less like pre-broken inside the wooden casing, you know, how Prismacolor it can be pre-broken. Which doesn't really irritate me that much, but these it's like or this is a Holbein actually, but like it's like more durable in that sense where it's not like gonna come to you broken. So it has better quality control, but yeah, they're very soft and blendable. And I like some of the like browner shades of colors. They're kind of good for skin tone. So they behave very well with Prismacolor. It's almost like 150 different Prismacolors.
Right. Oh, very cool. Yeah, I definitely want to give those a try. What do you suggest for a beginner then, say a beginner color pencil artist? What's the brand or the pencils that you suggest them getting first?
I would say Prismacolor would be the thing to start with. It's the cheapest. Like, yes, it's pre-broken at times, but it is certainly like the cheapest where I still think you get a lot of bang for the buck, kind of. And like the set of like 150 or 132. And not that you have to start that many, but like that's gotten like pretty cheap over the years, actually. So I think that's like a really good starting one. I think paper, just something with some tooth to it. The Strathmore Bristol Vellum I mentioned is great. But like, if you just grab printer paper, like, it's not going to take more than, like, two layers on it, which was a mistake I made in the beginning, right? and a lot of people aren't aware, like, you can't look at a paper and see it looks any different than any other paper. You have to actually, like, feel it and try it out. So it's kind of vague, and you're not aware of that in the beginning. But, yeah, Strathmore Bristol Vellum, like, 300 even is a good starting paper. I like 400 a lot, and just pressing lightly and saying, like, I'm not just going to put this color down and it'll look like this, but, like, I'm going to mix these two colors together to make what I'm trying to make. That'll go a long way.
Yeah. Do you feel like your world changed when you discovered paper other than printer paper? Because I definitely feel like I did.
Yeah. And I wasn't even aware of it. Like, I got a sketchbook, and that made a little bit of difference because it had better paper. And then it was like, well, I can't get my sketchbook to look like this framed piece of art looks. And I wasn't quite sure why. And then I switched over to, like, Bristol Vellum, and I was like, the paper is rougher and the drawings are rougher and taking longer. And I didn't understand why, that it's a toothier paper and that makes a difference. So it was vague in the beginning and I didn't understand it. And then getting more familiarity with it, it's like, oh, okay, this is like a characteristic of it, and it does something different.
Definitely. I definitely feel like the paper makes, I feel almost like the paper makes more difference than the pencil, because you could even use like a cheap set of pencils that aren't even any of those brands you mentioned, and it would still look better on a good paper than it would on like printer paper, wouldn't it?
Funny you mentioned that. Yeah, I mean, like, the paper will determine how many layers and therefore how much pigment you can absorb. So if you can't absorb much pigment, you know, it's going to be really, like, faded. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So have you ever wanted to, like, give up halfway through a piece?
Yeah, a lot of times. You know, and I've pushed through it at times. Like, I used to only work on one piece at a time. And it's like, well, you know, what else am I going to do? Like, got to keep going. And I'm working on, like, multiple pieces at the same time at this point, pretty much. And so I kind of don't say I'm giving up. I'm like, I'm setting this aside. I don't know if I'll come back to it, but I'm setting it aside. And I have some pieces that I'm like, I've set aside and I don't know if I'm coming back to. And it's like, if the answer comes, great. If not, that's okay too. But I don't want to think about how much time I lost in it. But they, each one of those is a learning experience. And it's not necessarily like I want to give up because it's like too much work. It's, I'm just like, I think it was not that great of an image to start with. And it's kind of like the enthusiasm just isn't there for that piece for me. But yeah, it sucks when that happens. It does. And then sometimes I'll be like, I'm just kind of tired of something. And then I come back to a few months later and it's like, oh my gosh, why did I ever leave this? This is so fun. Like, what was I thinking?
Do you ever feel like your vision for the piece changes as well halfway through? Like, you think, oh, I should have added that, or I should have not drawn that in, or something like that.
Absolutely. And especially on those ones I just mentioned, like, a lot of times it's like I tried out too many different things, and the colors did get muddy in that case, kind of a thing, and the values. But yeah, it's like, it's frustrating when that happens, because I do try to really plan it out and be like, okay, all I have to do is copy this plan I've made. But then it's like, oh no, I've thought of this other great idea. Let me try it out on the paper. It's like, so it's fun when that works out, but it's also kind of a little bit nerve-wracking in a way to try to deviate, because it is such an unforgiving medium, right? And it's hard to go lighter or more colorful. So it is always a little bit of a risk in a way, but then I've had times where it's like, oh, that was like so unexpected, but so cool. And it's magic, and sometimes it's dark magic in disguise.
That's a really good way of putting it, yeah. There definitely is not a forgiving medium, especially if you make a mistake going too dark too soon. It's so hard to get back from that, isn't it?
Yeah.
So do you find having this sort of slow process and working on multiple pieces at the same time hard to sell your work because you don't have like as many finished pieces, or it's not being finished quick enough, I suppose?
A little bit, yeah. One thing I've kind of felt, I guess, from the beginning is it's not for me, like what's going to make my work successful, how I perceive it anyway, isn't going to be how many pieces I make. It's going to be how well I make each piece. And my gallery, like, they've kind of told me that at times too. Like, we don't care how long it takes you to make a piece. Like, we'd rather have one great piece than like six kind of, you know, okay pieces. So that's been like reassuring in a way.
That's really helpful.
Yeah. What now?
I said that's really helpful because they're giving you that time.
Yeah, it is. But then I also see other like painters, for example, and it's like you could block things in with a brush and it's so flexible. And it's like, that must be nice. and they do make so much more work, and they still say I'm slow too. And it's like, ah. But yeah, it's kind of just the characteristic of colored pencil. It's a slow medium. And, you know, that's just like, if I'm going to be a colored pencil artist, that's just something I got to accept about it. But, you know, the door is always open if I want to do something else. And, you know, it feels good to choose to do it because it's like, this is kind of just what the medium is. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when you do take the time to make a really good piece, it does shine, I guess, better and more than other pieces that, you know, you can just smash out quickly, but they're not as good. There's always something in there, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I try to view it as is like, I think I can get more mileage in a way out of one like piece if I make it to the best of my ability than I could like three other pieces that are like kind of okay, good. Like, I think just the number of people it would reach and like kind of the interest in my work it would build, the own satisfaction I would feel for myself, like all those things, I think would be higher with the one piece than the three that are just kind of like, here they are. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So do you feel like your own feelings and experiences sort of shape the portraits that you create?
Absolutely. They are, you know, a lot of them are really based on like private moments and emotions. Some of them, it's like I'm thinking an emotion and I want to show it. Other times it's like, it's a little bit of a mystery to me what it is I'm drawing and why I'm drawing it. And I have to kind of draw it to decode it for myself in a way. But yeah, absolutely. I would say that they're, you know, kind of every portrait's a self-portrait in a way, kind of a thing. And yeah, I really connect more, I think, to the pieces I make that have like a stronger emotion to them than the pieces I was like, this is pretty and I want to draw it, kind of a thing. It feels more personal to me, I think, when it's very geared around an emotion or something I'm trying to express. And it's like, it feels like a representation almost of like a small chapter of my life.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah, definitely. That thing about every portrait's a self-portrait, I feel like that's definitely true. Very cool. So you work a lot with models, don't you? So when you're working with them, have you ever captured anything that's unexpected that sort of changes your idea you had in mind because now you've got a new one?
A little bit. With someone I don't know very well, like I've had models a lot of times where it's like I'm meeting them for the first time during the photo shoot. That is kind of like more rigid in a way, and it's harder to find what you just described. I like to draw myself a lot and my wife a lot. And with the two of us, like that, what you just said, like, I can really explore and find things, and we're much more casual. Like, we're not like kind of like so stiff and rigid and have our guards up. And that is so cool when it happens. I think that's like one of the reasons I like drawing the two of us so much. Or if I draw like a good friend, I can find that at times. One thing that's helped me to kind of find something a little bit more unexpected, though, is I have pictures of models that I took like years ago now at this point, but and I never drew the photos because I went on with something else from that photo shoot. But I have like these other poses, but I'm a different artist now, and I can kind of take the photo from back then and push it in a little bit of a different direction years later. And that's been really cool because it's like this unexpected thing, and I feel like it's being made through these different points of my life even, which is kind of unique in a way to me, because I've always thought and done art has been like, you think of it now and you draw it now, and now it's kind of like this time capsule then and now kind of a feel to me anyway. Not that other people would see that, but yeah, that's been fun to like take something in a different direction.
Well, that's really cool. And I guess you get to sort of see your evolution as an artist. You had that thought years ago, and now you can actually execute something better than what you thought.
Yeah. And it's like, I would have an idea or an emotion for something. Like I know what I was thinking, but then I would hit some problem with the photo and I wouldn't know exactly how to fix it. And I'd be like, why can't I get this to work? It works in my head. And now it's like a lot more obvious to me. And it's like, oh, all I needed to do is like this tweak this way. And then it changes everything. And it's really cool. Cause I would fight so hard to like make things work back then, and they wouldn't. Cause I just wasn't as aware.
That's really cool. I love that, because you are just seeing how you progress as an artist. I guess in many cases, you don't necessarily see that, especially like, you know, I'm a commission artist and I draw it and it goes out the door and I never see it again. So I don't necessarily get to see that evolutionary period of being able to do better than I did before, if you get what I mean. But yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
So these days, a lot of people want fast results. They want to get things down quicker. They want to produce amazing pieces of art quicker. But do you feel like artists should start slowing down and just enjoying the process more?
I'm not sure. So I think I know what you mean by that. And I think a lot of people would benefit from slowing down in a way. I do think there's also kind of the other extreme where I've been of like, I'm going too slow and I'm almost like putting work in for the sake of like putting work in, thinking it's going to make it better. And kind of not having, like, I've lost sight of the big picture at that point in a way. And I think that's bad too. But to the thought of like, you know, art being a slow thing and the world is getting more and more fast paced. And, you know, even with like AI coming in, yeah, I mean, certainly, I think it's good to keep an appreciation for the things that are slow. But I also think people are kind of valuing that more than we did maybe like 5 years ago, where because the world is so fast paced, it feels, and so on a screen these days, it does feel good to like pick up something tangible and kind of be very meditative with it and expressive. And even if no one sees it, I think art is becoming like a therapy for people in a way more and more as the world is going more fast paced. It's just, it's more meaningful now. But yeah, it is a very fast paced world we live in. And I don't like that personally. Yeah.
I feel like maybe you sort of answered my last question though, but we can try again. So if someone does pick up a colored pencil for the first time today, what mindset should they have to really enjoy it?
Really enjoy it. I think it's not about, is this going to be really good? It is about, am I having fun? I think, because a lot of people, they pick up something for the first time and they're learning a new skill, and it's like they start judging themselves. Am I any good at this? Am I not? And it's the reality is, like, some people are like this good when they first start, some people are this good when they start, but it's like there's all this. So there's you know, whether you're, you know, great at it or not, when you start, like, you can grow infinitely past wherever you are, and you'll be able to kind of be more expressive with it. But one thing I think that I really valued about those early days for me was when I had, like, it was so easy to have fun with it, and, like, it didn't have to be for anyone else's eyes. It just didn't matter what I did. It was so, like, non-professional in a way, and it was just about having fun. And so I think that there's real value in just exploring and trying things out and having fun, knowing that you can learn, and that if you appreciate it, you're the only person that really has to. And then from there, you know, see what other people think, and don't just let them say, you know, is this bad or good, whatever, like, get them to kind of articulate why, especially, like, other artists, really, I mean, and then try to grow from that, you know, when you're ready, when it feels right to you. But in the beginning, I would say really just try to have fun with it, and don't judge yourself, let yourself make whatever you're wanting to make, because there's a reason you wanted to do it in the first place, and that matters.
Yeah, definitely. Like, don't be afraid of being bad.
yeah. And even great artists think their work is bad all the time. So, yeah.
You sort of have to do that self-reflection thing to actually see that you have actually improved.
Absolutely, yeah.
So do you feel like it's slightly different now? Like, because like you said, it was really fun in the beginning, like, because it wasn't for anyone else, it was just for you. Do you feel like that has slightly shifted years on now, that you are doing it for galleries and actually for other people, I suppose?
In a way. And I've had to really kind of, like, stop myself from making it so, like, about anything external, and kind of bring it back in a way. And that can be challenging at times, but I've also heard so many times, like, make the work you want to make. Like, you can't make it for anyone else, because that's just, like, not a thing you can actually control. You know, you can only hope someone else likes it. So, yeah, it is something that you can start thinking too much about. But I mean, really, when I make the work I think that I feel really resonates with me, it might not resonate to everyone, and it won't, but it's going to resonate to someone else out there, you know, and it might not be the person I want it to be with, but, you know, it is going to kind of find its person to appreciate it in a way. But yeah, it is really cool, I think, and special when it's like, you made this for yourself, yet it's kind of like going out to the world in a way. I think viewers can sense that, and they can sense when it's there, and they can sense when it's not. And so really, people wind up appreciating, like, the honesty and the kind of trueness, the self and the vulnerability in a way, when that's really there, and you can't really fake that.
Yeah, that's so true. Definitely. That authenticity of you really loving that piece of work and actually putting, I guess, a bit of your soul into it. It does resonate with people that way, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Jesse. That was an incredible time just chatting and talking about your work. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Sema, and your work is wonderful too, and I love your studio you've got behind there. It's very nice.
Oh, thank you so much. If you've enjoyed listening, remember you can watch this podcast with video and no ads at learnmycraft.com, where you'll also find animal art practice journals, books, and tutorials to get you started. Hit subscribe and follow the podcast, and we'll see you next time.